Zomaim. April is National Poetry Month, and I wanted to bring you something a little different. A small local library branch hosted a reading of an activist poetry mother-daughter team, reading from their seventh collection of poetry called Mud Cloth Roots. I'll let them introduce themselves to you.
Mind check, 1, 2.
Mind check, 1, 2.
Mind check, 1, 2.
Mind check, 1, 2.
Mind check, this is a mind check.
This is a mind check.
Check out your mind.
Check out your mind.
Mind check, this is a mind check.
This is a mind check.
Check out your
mind. Check out your mind.
Mind check, this is a mind check.
This is a mind check.
Check out your mind.
Check out your mind. Check it out now.
Have you seen your mind lately? A black woman poet is a catalyst.
My mind is
she
opening
is a warrior
up to the universe,
a shero,
and I'm
a shrine.
Having trouble staying grounded.
A black
speaking
woman poet
English
can spin
with
a yarn
tongue.
That will take you someplace
I don't need
you've
to
never
fly.
Been,
my mind
and
can
never
soar
would go
at warp speeds
if she
hadn't to dimensions
been there before and decided to tell you a thing or two about it.
My mind
a black woman
is
poet
opening
can
up
word up like
to
nobody
the universe.
Else, and you know I'm right, day or night. You don't want to mess with no black woman poet. Greetings, my name is Dajabu.
I'm Dr. V.S. Chochezi.
And together we are
Straight Out Scribes. And sometimes people say, you kind of look alike, are you related? And we are. She's my mother.
And she's my daughter. And before we start, I'd like to tell you a little bit about us. Dr. V.S. Chochezi and Stajabu are a unique mother and daughter poetry team known as Straight Out Scribes. They have read their original work at numerous venues in California and nationally. They are widely published, have received many honors and awards, and have self-published 7 books of poetry and 2 CD compilations. Their newest anthology titled Mud Cloth Roots is available from straightoutscribes.com, amazon.com, and any venue where they are reading. In addition to their writing and performance accomplishments, this duo has produced and coordinated many, many other events and fundraisers in Sacramento since they first decided to make it their home in 1991. They are often referred to as activist poets and have spent the past 25 years working on the campaign to free Mumia Abu-Jamal and the Move 9. Stajabu, that's me, was born in Philadelphia and raised in Camden, New Jersey. She is a writer, editor, producer, poet, health advocate, prison rights activist, graphic artist, and craftsperson. She's also a veteran of the United States Air Force. Daughter V.S. Chochezi, Dr. V.S. Chochezi, was born in Riverside, California, raised in Camden, New Jersey. She earned a B.A. in journalism from Delaware State College and M.A. in communication studies from California State University, Sacramento, and recently earned a doctorate in education from Drexel University in Sacramento. Dr. Chochezi is a writer, poet, editor, photojournalist, publication specialist, and college professor. She has 2 adult daughters, a son-in-law, 2 grandchildren. Like us on Facebook? 3 grandchildren. Yeah, we got a new one. And I will open, right. Okay. The way our program is going to be today, we'll alternate poems, we'll do another weave is what we call it when we both read together, and we'll do some more poetry, then I'll do the mud cloth presentation, and she'll talk about how our book came about. This is called Love That Will Love You Back. I love my bed, and my bed loves me. I love to be all snuggled and cozy, covered and secure, enjoying the nice, slow relaxation that pours over me, savoring the last few waking moments before my bed and I become one and drift together into the beautiful and lovely, spiritually resuscitating, physically rejuvenating state of marriage called sleep, where body and bed are wed, blissfully united throughout dream-filled hours while forsaking all others. And without a doubt, my bed loves and supports me, which is why I am reluctant to leave even when I need, because I know it will miss me until I come again weary, answering its call to recapture the feeling my welcoming, wonderful bed gives me. I love my bed. I love my bed. And my bed loves.
So, Sacramento has been blessed to host Elizabeth Catlett. Anybody ever heard of Elizabeth Catlett? She's an artist, most known for her sculptures. And she used to have a sculpture of Sojourner Truth outside the Sacramento Theater. And she's passed on now, but her art continues to represent her. And that statue is now at the Crocker Art Museum. I think it's in the courtyard, so you don't have to pay to go into the museum to see the statue. And I was asked to write a tribute to Elizabeth Catlett, so I wanted to share that with you because I didn't know much about her before there was a lot of publicity around her statue. So I went and did some research and was very inspired, not only by her art, but also just by her as an artist. Elizabeth Catlett Tribute, and it's on page 151 in the book. Daughter of ex-slaves, woman of my grandmother's generation, her art was more than an appreciation of beauty. Her heart more than swelled for the aesthetic. Her heart ached and her art served as social commentary. Reflecting her passion and values, reflecting her appreciation of black struggle, workers, and womanhood, she practiced solidarity and chose not fleeing, not becoming a fugitive, but a conscientious objector to a racist America. She opted to live the majority de su vida painting and sculpting black and brown gente among a rich Mexican terrain. And though she now rests among the ancestors, her creations will undoubtedly continue to inspire generations to express, not just for art's sake, but to uplift, honor, respect, and stand up for justice. Long live Elizabeth Catlett. Viva Elizabeth Catlett. Amen and Ashe.
Viva.
Viva.
Poetry is my thing. Maybe 50 years ago or so, it was okay to write poems about birds, bees, flowers, and trees, but these days, nature has been perverted with additives, pesticides, pollution, fluoride, hormone chicken, bees raised from honey, trees grown for money, landfills, oil wells, genetically modified foods, killing us softly. Poems are lame to me if they don't speak change to me. I want to hear poems about creating a world where all people will be able to live healthy, fruitful lives, fulfilled. I want to hear poems that speak of human rights, civil rights, women's rights, gay, lesbian, bi, transgender rights, workers' rights, prisoners' rights, seniors' rights, children's rights, the right to live without the threat of nuclear war or man-made diseases killing us softly. I want to hear truth talking in your face, poems about the unemployed, the poor, the homeless people in the world, corporations destroying our rainforests, governments vowing to reach and pollute another planet while they acting like they don't know what's causing cancer on this one, as they sell us products to eat, drink, drive, smoke, and wear that are killing us so softly. You know, poetry is my thing, but I only want to hear revolutionary poems. Speak to me of change, y'all. Speak to me of change, y'all, or you will not speak to me at all.
This poem was first published in an anthology called Late Peaches, which was put out by former poet laureate Bob Stanley. And it's called Theoretically Speaking. Since matter is neither created nor destroyed, and since in some sense we are matter, we were neither created nor destroyed, then some part of us has always existed and will always exist, just in some other form. This concept, combined with imagination and creativity, certainly can produce notions ranging from reincarnation as a tree, a bird, or another human being, or ascending into heaven, plunging into hell, mud to man, dust to dust. The possibilities are as endless as our ideas, and we, at the very least, are in this way eternal. Yes. We now interrupt this program to bring you a very important message.
People, there's a bird of prey out there, and you need to beware, because it's wearing the disguise of an eagle. There's a bird of prey out there, and you need to beware, because it's masquerading as an eagle. Check it.
Yeah, there's a bird of prey out there.
There's a bird of prey out there, and you need to beware,
because it's lurking
people
in the shadows, can't stand the light, loves lies, greed, trickery, and deceit. Bloody
Panama
competition and poor toys. Better guard your little girls and boys, cause there's a bird of prey out there, and you need to beware, cause its only natural enemy is intelligence.
Yeah.
We now return you to your regularly scheduled program.
But everything's gonna be okay.
Everything's gonna be okay.
The scribes are in the house today.
And everything's gonna be okay. Everything's gonna be okay.
Everything's gonna be okay.
The scribes are in the house today. And everything's gonna be okay.
Okay. Woman's work. Today, right now, a young woman somewhere in the Sahara, Mojave, Gobi, or Kalahari, China, Haiti, Africa, South America, Mississippi, Appalachia, Mexico, Russia, Greenland, Mongolia, Afghanistan, Australia, is carrying a bucket, pail, goatskin, or pan full of water to her family that weighs as much as she does. She walks a well-worn path made by the many feet of the women who walk before her. There is a woman somewhere in the world right now collecting sticks, cutting down banana leaves, chopping down a tree, chipping a block of ice, making mud bricks, mixing clay with cow dung, raising pieces of corrugated tin, a blanket of cardboard to make a shelter, as did the many hands of the women before her. A woman somewhere in this world right now is being beaten by her father, husband, brother, prison guard, maybe even her son, with nowhere to run for help or protection, as she has witnessed the same happen to many women before her. There are women begging, rummaging through garbage, stripping, borrowing, prostituting themselves, working two jobs while taking classes, driving with no license or insurance, hiding from police, bill collectors, and exes, eating less so their children will have more, as they've learned to do from the women before them. As we sit and chit-chat among ourselves, tsk-tsk and shrug, suck our teeth and purse our lips, indignant about the gangs and hoes, street potholes being left on hold, put on the back burner, a bus that doesn't show. While we complain about a program's late start, long checkout lines at the supermarket, freeway traffic, drug addicts, lack of art in schools, there are young women in this world right now who will never see the inside of a classroom, know the freedom to choose their own mate, use a washing machine or refrigerator, go out on a date, as none of the women in their family, village, camp, compound, project, or settlement have done any of those things before them. Whenever you pray, chant, turn inward, and connect to the Most High creative energy in the universe, think of these women Send them positive vibrations during your meditations as they struggle with arranged marriages, genital mutilation, incarceration, war, famine, drought, floods, monsoons, hurricanes, earthquakes, disease, rape, and loss. That the load they carry one day soon may be lighter and their path brighter and easier to travel than the women that came before them. And remember, we are being watched by the young women all around us. They are not only learning from what we say, they are observing everything we do and will follow the paths made by our many feet. Let us do everything we can to ensure that the path we walk is a path of positivity, peace, and power that will make life better for the many women who follow after us. Ashe.
So this poem I wrote, I had an opportunity to visit Tanzania in 2006 in East Africa. And I was in the country for most of that time. I was very close to Mount Kilimanjaro. I didn't climb the mountain. I didn't think I needed to do that. But but it was. I was surrounded by beauty and nature. And just began to hear sounds that were different from what we hear here in Sacramento, for sure. One of the sounds that I heard, it sounded like this. Tell me if you've ever heard this sound. A-roo-doo-doo. It was a bird. It was an unusual bird, or an unusual sounding bird, at least for me. But I would hear these different sounds, and after a while, it started feeling like maybe they were trying to tell me something. When I was there, they had this compound where people would come out and artists would gather, artists, rappers, singers, dancers, drummers. And so everybody would be out, and it was sort of like a freestyle jam session. And so I contributed this freestyle poem, which later turned into this poem. If you could just hear. If you would just listen. If you would just listen. A-roo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Mother Earth is speaking, her messages are clear. If you would just listen, if you could just hear. If you would just listen, she's sending a warning with global warming. Rain, floods, drought, signs of pain, tsunamis, tornadoes, blizzards, and hurricanes. She's begging, she's pleading, stop the madness, stop the insanity, stop the wars and destruction. Cease the vanity, save humanity. If you would just listen, if you could just hear, her messages are clear. Cease killing for oil, stop destroying the soil. Underground nuclear testing, satellites in space, disrupting the Earth's natural balance and pace. If you would just listen, if you could just hear, the ancestors are near. They're trying hard to get through to you if you would just listen. They're shouting, whispering in bird song and cricket calls. Hear me, 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 hear me. If you would just listen.
Thank you. We're each other's best fans.
I'm a huge Djabu fan.
I'm a huge BS fan. One of our other pastimes when we're not teaching classes and writing poems, we're playing with her grandchildren, which are my great-grandchildren. And I enjoy them so much that I wrote this poem after visiting them one day for my granddaughter, Tisho, the mother of my great-grandchildren. It's called Mommy, Look. To hear these words from the lips of my great-grandchildren warms my soul. Their mommy is young and bold. I remember when she herself was born, and her mommy as well, and when she and her sister were little children, calling to my daughter, Mommy, look! She now mommies her own world with pride. Hide and seek with this one, potty training that one, patient and calm, I mean patient. She is the epitome of the word. Bathing, hugging, breastfeeding, guiding, correcting, teaching, watching as her two young ones grow. A new one is on the way as she and husband Billy plan and talk and cook and work. And look, Mommy, look. Mommy, look. And have you seen the car keys as he bends down to give a strong daddy hug and gentle kiss to little outstretched arms before leaving Mommy and babies? To rituals which give meaning and order to their lives as mommies do every day, everywhere. To watch the granddaughter whose September 26th birth I witnessed during a hurricane in Dover, Delaware, embrace the role and demonstrate her seemingly bottomless energy, skill, and mothering knowledge with such grace and love is truly miraculous. We wait on the brink of expectation. Makai, Sajay, Billy, and Tisho will have another addition soon. And as with the first two, we will all be better for it. And we did welcome Isaiah Xavier Ward on November 15th, 2014. Ashe.
So this is, somebody told me I should make a children's book out of this. Let me know what you think. It's called Don't Hate. And I think you might be able to relate. Sometimes. Maybe, maybe not. Fools be hating on you, waiting on you to make a mistake. They just be hating on you, waiting on you to fall on your face. Can't stand to see you smiling. They want to see you cry. They just hating and debating and telling each other lies. Somehow when you're standing tall, it makes them feel small. They think that when your light is shining, they can't be seen. So they're hating on you, acting foul, and treating you mean. You're good at most things and even great at a few. You have talent, love, morals, values, and people who love you. And you're puzzled why these fools are out there breaking their necks, just hating on you, waiting on you, lacking respect. And all your time and effort go unappreciated. So now you're doubting yourself and your confidence is shaking. And you know that the mistakes will come and you're certain to fall from time to time. And they'll be standing on the sidelines, laughing and enjoying your pain, pouring cold water on you while you're standing out in the rain. And now you're scared to make an effort, afraid to improve, because the haters don't like it and they act all rude. They say you're too smart and you think you're so cute, and they calling you square and saying you ain't cool. So you avoid success, you start slacking like them, but in this scenario, hey, nobody wins. Let's rise above the haters and do our very best. Let's try to jump the hurdles and pass every test. Because when they're hating like that, know that you're on the right track and keep doing your thing, as a matter of fact. Help them fools realize that the problem ain't you and that there's room and opportunity for them to succeed too. Thank you. You like my Ebonics? All right.
You ain't making a book.
I'm going to talk about my cloth. So I had this really great presentation all done, and I left it home. So I was so busy trying to get the poetry together. Plus, I'm trying to deal with allergies today. But I want to tell you, the mud cloth originated in Mali, West Africa. Mali is bordered by 7 countries. If I remember correctly, it's Algeria, Senegal down here, Nigeria, Ivory Coast, and several other countries. I had a map for you. It's shaped like a lopsided hourglass. This would be the top, and this would be the bottom of Mali. The Niger River runs this way through from Nigeria into a curve into Mali and down to the end into Senegal. The Niger is one of the longest rivers in Africa, and the tributaries are what feed all those agricultural areas in Mali. Mali is a cotton producing country, one of the biggest. As a matter of fact, now China is investing in Mali. to raise cotton. This is an example of mud cloth. I think mud cloth is so fascinating because of the process. First, you have to plant the cotton, reap the cotton, make the thread. The women make the thread from the cotton. The men weave the panels of mud cloth from the cotton. They use a foot loom, and women weren't allowed to use it for many, many, many centuries because they felt it would damage their reproductive organs. And it's a very difficult process. Once the strip of cloth is made, then it's hung out to, no, for, then it's dyed. Okay. So as you can see, you may not be able to see this, but there are panels. Mud cloth is made into panels which are between 6 and 7 inches wide and about 2 yards long. And then those panels are sewn together to make a garment like this. These are the panels. And this is what the mud cloth looks like before any color is applied to it. Okay. So here we have this cotton. We have this panel. It's all done. It's been woven and everything. And washed and shrunk so that it would be tight. Now, they take this and dye it in a tea made from 2 trees in that area, in the middle area of Mali. Once it's dyed, and the dye has to boil, and it has to wait 24 hours before it's dyed, before it's hung to dry. It's hung to dry, all these panels, so you can see maybe a production of them all along, like library books all along someone's house or garden or compound. After the dye is applied and it's dried, then they put the design. The design is made so that with mud that has to ferment for 1 year. So they always have mud fermenting. This is mud from the Niger tributaries, and it's high in iron oxide. But the only way it will adhere to and make the dye is if it is dyed in the tea first. So well, if you can't just take it and put it on something and wash it out and expect it to stay there. Unless the dyed tea leaves are what make it, it's called a mordant, make it stay and color the cloth. So now we're applying the mud to the cloth. What they do is they outline the design and they fill in the mud around the white areas. They don't paint the white areas on. What is it?
It's an antelope, and it looks like a wolf and a warrior.
So this is the dark is made around the white, and then they're washed. It's dried, then it's washed, then it's reapplied and washed, then reapplied. 3 times they do this to make the designs that dark. Once that's done and it's dry, bleach is put on to make the white, whiter. And then that's washed in the solution to bring it out even more. See how stark this white is? So these white dots, they were bleached with the compound that they also make, the women make in Mali. And each woman has their own recipe. Like they may add a little something to the mud, or they put an extra tea in the leaves. Just like they do henna, everyone has their own. I lived in Sudan, and everyone had their own henna design. Some people added different coffees to their henna, some teas, some different things to make it even more dark or whatever. And that's what they do in Mali. Every woman has their own recipe. The women are the primary artists for the designs. They pass these designs on to their daughters, and they're kept secret to them. Only they know the meaning, but there are some universal meanings to some of the designs. Like this would be a part of a warrior's belt. Anytime you see jagged lines with dots in the middle, that's a warrior's belt. These are called iguana elbows. This was called Alligator Feet. So yeah, that's a little bit about Mudcloth and a little bit about, more about Mali. Their national flag is green, gold, and red, just like the colors of the Rasta. So Nana and I were very attracted to the Mudcloth. The first time we saw it, we had to have a piece of Mudcloth. It's very expensive. Extremely expensive. I don't even know how we... Did someone give this to you?
Yes.
Yeah, see, most of the Mudcloth we have, someone gave us because we could never afford it. But it's very, very expensive. So the people only use it. If you see pictures of people in Mali, they have on colorful garments and everything. Mudcloth is used for very special occasions. When women have birth, they use Mudcloth. When they go through initiation, they wear a Mudcloth skirt. The men only wear it for hunting. That was back in the day. Now everyone wears Mudcloth for everything. But the people in Mali still are very cautious about what they wear, because everything you wear there means something. And even though these designs have a generic meaning, in each village they have a meaning. So you might be wearing something that denotes that you're really wealthy. Or you might be wearing something that says you're an artist or a farmer. And a lot of farmland is in Mali, and they also do a lot of export of animal meat, cattle, sheep, and goats. You can find it online, that's for sure. I had to do a lot of research. It's not really a lot. It's more information about Kente and some of the other fabrics. But I had to really do a lot of research to find out more about Mudcloth. Very difficult to find. And it is a woman's industry primarily, but now the cotton is not doing good this year. More men are doing Mudcloth and painting Mudcloth designs. And it's becoming almost a household name. V.S. is going to tell you about our book. And then we're going to do some more poetry, a couple more pieces, and we'll be done.
So this is our newest work. We just came out with this in February. There are 51 poems apiece in the book. 51 from me, 51 from Stajabu. And this is our 7th collection of poetry. We self-published, so I did the layout and the design. And my daughter did the pictures, my eldest daughter. Did the picture. She's a photographer. It's 7 chapters in this collection, and the topics range from everything like love, the environment, family. Oh, tributes. Tributes to different people locally, to our family, and to famous people, of course. There's a tribute to Miles Davis in the collection. And I read for you the tribute to Elizabeth Catlett. We're very happy about how the book turned out, and it's been really well received. This is maybe our 7th reading since we've started, since we released the book. And everywhere we go, people have told us how much they're enjoying the book. So.
Well, the way she explained it, I didn't do anything, okay?
51 poems apiece.
But I helped.
Self-published.
I had to help edit all the poems. Yes. We had to decide what poems. We have a lot of poetry. This is not even half of the poetry that we could have put in the book. And we go through that every time we do a book. So this being our 7th book, we hadn't published in 10 years. So we had quite a bit of poetry already to go through to choose what would go in the book. I'm going to read from the tribute section again, because I really like to give tribute to people. For Miles Davis, on page 158. Because we love music. Does everyone love music?
Yes.
We love music. I love all kind of music. I love country music, reggae, opera, classical. I love all kind of music. Thanks for the music. Thank you, Creator, for your master plan and Pharoah Saunders, Leon Thomas, Sarah Vaughan, Ruth Brown, James Brown, Motown, and the Philly Sound. With the Delphonics, didn't I blow your mind this time all over the place? Thank you for the Temptations, Nat King Cole, Natalie Cole, Cole Porter, John Coltrane, the Four Tops. Rhythm and Blues, B.B. King, Bobby Blue Bland, Blue Magic, Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, Blueberry Hill, Fats Domino, King Pleasure, Moody's Mood, Patti LaBelle, Phoebe Snow, Ella Fitzgerald, Carmen McRae, D.C. Ray, Ray Charles, The Impressions, O.J.'s, Funkadelics, The Miracles, and Bootsy. Because music has inspired me, like Malcolm, who was rhythmic and full of the magic of music, as he spoke in lyrical tones full of bass, and Marley and Tosh with their conscious lyrics sending my head in a dread direction. Give thanks and praises to the Most High for Miles Davis, Grover Washington, George Benson, Jesse Belvin, Donny Hathaway, Roberta Flack, Positive, Frankie Beverly, we miss you, Dinah Washington, Billie Holiday, Minnie Riperton, Tammy Terrell, and Marvin Gaye, Nick Ashford, we miss you. And for all the inspiration you sent our way, we take this opportunity to say, Asante Sana, Shukran, Muchas Gracias, Merci, Merci Beaucoup. Thank you so very, very much for the music.
I'll also read from Tributes. This is for my daughter, the one that made the picture, that took the pictures. It's called Far Above the Surface. So my daughter is in a master's program for art photography, and she likes to take pictures, but she's really a fantastic writer and a great poet. But it's hard to get her to share her work with people. And so I wrote this poem for her, Far Above the Surface. She pens four alarm fire poems. Words show insight, high wisdom, far above the surface, where it is too easy to underlook. Smoke rises from pages, fire rages, word flames, sends your thoughts. She's loquacious, gregarious in most settings, but her poems lie quietly, smoldering on pages and notebooks on obscure websites, and in anthologies tucked away on scant bookshelves. She's wrestled her nerves and shared her words before appreciative crowds at times. And I long to see her stand before people again to spark their spirits with her young, innocent, wise thoughts. She's not as young and innocent as she used to be. Confident, strong, raw, and real, she pens four alarm fire poems, extreme wisdom, so far above the surface, too easy to underlook. And if you are privileged, one day you'll experience it firsthand, feel the intense heat and tell tales of how you were singed and inspired by the blaze.
Okay. Can anybody hear me? Does anybody feel me? Is anybody listening to what's going on? We've got to stop. Before it's too late.
Can anybody hear me? Does anybody feel me? Is anybody listening to what's going on? We've got to stop hating.
Before it's too late.
With love.
Can anybody hear me? Does anybody feel me?
Is anybody listening to what's going on?
We've got to stop hate.
Before it's too late.
With love.
More love.
Try love, and peace. Thank you, everybody.
Stajabu wore a button reading the Move 9, so I asked her to share its meaning.
The Move 9 are a family called the Move Family Africa. They live in Philadelphia, and they've been in prison for 33 years. It's nine of the family. That happened in 1975.
And what was the circumstances?
The circumstances were they were asked to vacate an area of Philadelphia called Palatine Village, and they refused to leave because it was their home. and the Philadelphia Police Department served warrants on several of them. And when they refused to come out, they cut off all utilities to their house, water, everything. And they put up a blockade so that nobody could get out without coming through there. But the Philadelphia Friends Society went through the blockades and took water and food to them on a daily basis. So they kept the blockade up for a year.
That's impressive.
I know. It was tremendous city resources to do that, right? For one family. And then one day, shots were fired, like early in the morning. And that gave the police an excuse to go in there and use fire hoses and everything to rout out the whole family. And when they came out, a police officer was shot during all the shooting. Someone was shooting. But according to the judge, no one could tell from the ballistics report whose bullets killed the police officer. Officer James Ramp was the officer who was killed. So the judge sentenced them as a family. He said since they were a multicultural group, so there were white people, and Chicanos, and black people all in this family called MOVE Family Africa. Their leader, their coordinator, was called John Africa. Well, he said, since you call yourself a family, I'm sentencing you as a family, and he sentenced them to 30 to 100 years.
So what's the status? I mean, probation, or do you know what?
They've been up for parole several times. The parole board has not released them. They've done the minimum over 30 years, and they're still holding them. They say unless they renounce their family, they won't release them. They will not do that. And there's a lot of information about the move. The story is so protracted struggle. After that, the MOVE family tried to negotiate with the city of Philadelphia to release their family. And after 2 years, the city shut down negotiations and refused to negotiate them with them. Well, if you knew anything about MOVE, you would know they were very unorthodox. Their hair, they didn't comb their hair. They didn't send their children to school. They grew all their own food, and they were very self-sufficient, self-sustaining.
They grew their own food. Mm-hmm. Gas.
Yes. Yeah. That brought the ire of a lot of neighbors on them because they thought they were so weird. But so when the city cut off negotiations and refused to answer their calls or anything, they set up a bunker on top of the house with a loudspeaker because they're very resourceful people. And they would broadcast to the city, "You crazy." They would cuss them out and everything, and the neighbors start complaining to the city. And then the city, for some reason, decided they'd had enough. And they dropped a bomb on the house.
A smoke bomb, you mean?
No, C4. They called ATF, FBI, Philadelphia Police Department, all collaborated. Because they declared the bunker a threat to the whole neighborhood. They dropped a bomb. It was a C4 explosive. It's
wow.
Documented. There's books about it. There's probably books here about it. And on May 13th, 1982. Okay, they dropped the bomb on the roof. The people took cover in the basement. They were prepared. And the police knew who was in there. They monitored the house every day. There were six children. Five children, six adults, and animals in the house. They dropped a bomb on the house full of people. When the house caught on fire, they refused to put it out. They let it burn down. They burned down 62 homes in the process.
That's insane.
Tell me about it. They burned down 62 homes and killed 11 people.
I can't even wrap my head around that.
You know, I can't even talk about it hardly without crying.
I can't even begin to fathom.
I was a journalist at the time, and I started getting calls from everywhere because I didn't have a TV. People said, You see what happened? People were just crazy. They let the house burn down. When people tried to get out, they shot at them.
Jeez.
Ramona Africa escaped, and Birdie, a little boy who was like 8, escaped, the only two that escaped. Once the house was, the whole area burned down, what could you do? You know, they arrested Ramona for inciting a riot and took Bertie and put him in a foster home until he could be taken by his father. His mother was a MOVE member, but his father was not. That's the short version. Who have died in, two of the MOVE Nine have died in prison. Phil Africa just died last month. Merle Africa died about 10 years ago. And I was corresponding with both of them. So I lost friends, more friends. We lived in Camden, which was right across from Philly, and I was a journalist, and my friend, most of my friends were journalists. So we knew the MOVE Nine because everybody was trying to get pictures and stories, and they would only let access to a few people. Mumia Abu-Jamal was one who wanted to tell the truth about the MOVE family Africa. And because of that, he became an enemy of the police department. And at the earliest opportunity, they were able to lock him down and accuse him of murder of a police officer, too, because he was confronted them on a dark street one night, and he wound up being beaten almost to death and then charged with murder. So he's still in jail. So I don't have my Mumia button because I couldn't find it. It's probably on something else I wore, but Mumia is the other person that they're friends. You know.
Well, hopefully people will hear this that weren't aware of that, and we'll look into it as well, and maybe we can get those that are still surviving.
Yeah, they're on Facebook.
They are.
Justice for the MOVE Nine has a Facebook page, and Mumia Abu-Jamal has a Facebook page.
Excellent.
So, yeah. Thank you for asking.
The MOVE Nine continues to be in the news if you're interested in following. Meanwhile, poetry is written in all shapes and sizes, so to speak, so consider participating or listening to hosted poetry events at your library, bookstore, or coffee shop. Do something different. Next time you fill those ice trays, add drops of natural food coloring. Why should hydration be boring?